Welcome to Take 10 with Infection Control, a series of casual conversations on topics of interest to the healthcare community.
Hi everybody, my name is Julie Marshall. I am from Nursing Education and I am here with Dr. Shiley to discuss special precautions.
Hi, I'm Kevin Shiley. I'm an infectious disease doctor and I work with Catholic Health's Infection Prevention Control. So, special precautions, yeah, those are really, really important around the hospital, and I think it's a great topic to discuss today.
So, our standard precautions is something we hear about all day, every day. So, what does that specifically entail?
So, standard precautions is a general term that we use for really what we should be doing all of the time to help prevent the transmission of infection to other patients, but also to ourselves. It's part of protecting ourselves as healthcare workers. And it's basically the idea that whenever you are encountering a patient or a situation where you anticipate any kind of exposure to blood or other bodily fluids, that you take appropriate measures to prevent the transmission to yourself, okay? So I'll give you an example. When you go to see a patient, if they are coughing quite a bit, you're at the doorway and as you're walking in, they're really, really coughing, they're not able to cover their mouth or their nose, that might be a time when you decide, I need to protect myself further than simply just going up and walking into the patient's face. And so you might go grab a surgical mask to wear and maybe even some eye protection if you think that they're really coughing up a lot of material that could end up on you. So that's an example of a situational response to an anticipated problem. Another example for standard precautions would be putting on a pair of gloves whenever you anticipate a potential risk where the patient could be bleeding. So an example might be when you're placing a peripheral IV into a patient, you should really be wearing gloves so you don't come into contact with blood and put yourself at risk for bloodborne pathogens like hepatitis C.
Are you ever wrong for putting gloves on even if you don't expect to come into contact if you're touching a patient?
You know, I personally am a universal glover, and I've had many experiences in my career where I did not necessarily anticipate putting my hand into something that I did. Now, granted, I'm an infectious diseases specialist, so I am around things that are dripping and oozing and pussy and everything else. But I can tell you that it's certainly reasonable, in my opinion, if you anticipate going into a patient's room and doing a physical exam or touching something really in the immediate environment of a patient that could have been easily contaminated. There's nothing wrong with putting on a pair of gloves to help protect yourself.
So we talked about the standard precautions where we can put the gloves on and just make sure we're protecting the patient and ourselves. Is there any time when we have to put on other special equipment to protect ourselves and the patient?
Yeah, there are definitely other times. And these are those occasions where we know that the patient has a particular infection that is at very high risk for transmission either within the hospital or even potentially transmission to you as a healthcare worker. So these would be situations, for example, when there is a patient with an active MRSA infection or a VRE or a drug-resistant gram-negative infection would be some examples where we would use something called contact precautions. And these are the situations when you go to the patient room and outside the door you'll see a green sign that says contact isolation. And what that means is that the patient in the room has a type of infection that can be transmitted simply by contact with hands or other equipment. And in that situation, if it's a highly resistant bacteria such as MRSA, we really, really want to avoid transmitting that around the hospital. So we do these extra added precautions by having anyone that enters the room put on a disposable gown or sometimes a reusable gown that gets laundered afterwards, plus a pair of gloves. And the idea behind this is just to take one more step to prevent the transmission of these highly resistant bacteria. Another important bacteria in this group is C. diff, which can be transmitted, again, by the contact route. We also do other forms of precautions besides contact precautions. So one example would be droplet precautions, and these patient rooms are signified by a pink sign outside the door. It says droplet isolation. And in that situation, what we're trying to prevent is transmission of certain things that can be spread via droplets coming from the patient's airway. The most common example of this would be influenza. And the way I like to think about influenza and some of the other things that can be spread by droplet is like little tiny cannonballs. So if you imagine a patient coughing or sneezing, you're seeing these particles that are fairly small, kind of shooting out of the patient's mouth. And we've actually tried to measure how far these things go. And they go like a cannonball would be shot out of a cannon, about 6 feet. So they kind of arc through the air and then within 6 feet land on the ground. And they're only in the air for a very brief amount of time. So in those situations, the best way to prevent transmission to you is just to put on a simple surgical mask if you're within 6 feet of the patient. There's a couple other organisms we do worry about where you need droplet besides the flu. One would be certain types of meningitis. So in the first 24 hours of treatment for anyone with suspected or known meningitis, we do recommend droplet isolation for those patients. After 24 hours, they can come off because the antibiotics should have worked by then. And then pertussis, which is whooping cough. If you have a patient with suspected pertussis, those patients should also be placed on droplet isolation.
So you talk about the droplet precautions and the masks. Are there any other masks that we use throughout the hospitals for different type of precautions?
Yeah. So the last form of precaution is called airborne precautions. And these are the patients where we wear very tight-fitting masks. Sometimes people call them N95 masks. And these are masks that fit tightly around the nose and have these tight straps that go over the head. These are really used for infections that are not spread by droplet, but by spread by aerosol. And so instead of that cannonball thing I was talking about before, think about airborne infections as spread through an aerosol route. So this would be things like tuberculosis, where when the patient coughs, the tuberculosis organisms don't just land on the ground in a few seconds, but actually stay in the air for up to a couple of hours. They just float around. And in that situation, you need to have a very tight-fitting mask to prevent transmission to you. There's some other examples, though. Another one is chickenpox. So, you know, when we think of chickenpox, we think of a skin rash, but it turns out with primary chickenpox, it actually goes into the lungs as well, and when patients cough, it can spread. Similarly, if you have a patient that has we'll call it disseminated zoster, which is basically like a recurrence of chickenpox all over the body, those patients also need a airborne mask.
So every year we all have to get a yearly evaluation and they have us try on those special masks. Is there a reason that we have to try them on every single year? And what is that called?
Oh, all right. So the annual fit testing. So you guys, everybody has to get annual fit testing. This is really, really important. This is a safety measure. So when you put on these tight-fitting masks, you know, everyone's faces are a little bit different. And some people need a smaller mask, some people need a larger mask. And it's really, really important to make sure that when you put the mask on, it's doing what it's supposed to do. So when you go into Associated Health, they put that like kind of cone of silence over you. I don't know, it looks kind of like those things they put over dogs after they get surgery. And they spray this saccharin in the air and they have you sniff. And if you can taste it, that means that the mask isn't fitting well. So it's really, really important you get fit tested every single year so you know that the mask, you know, the right mask to wear if you ever have to go into an airborne precautions room.
Well, thank you for discussing the ways we can prevent further infection to our patients today.
Thanks for having me.